Blog Talk Radio.
It's already done.
It's the Pressure Points Unpacked podcast with host Tyra Little. We're live Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. This show deals with personal and community issues by getting to the root cause and causes on an open and raw level. We're unpacking emotional, spiritual, mental and physical topics that influence and often control us. Get ready to unload, examine, and process. Let's get unpacked on Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network, Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time.
Well, hello, and welcome to Pressure Points Unpacked podcast. I'm your host, Tyra Little. And we are transforming Tuesdays spiritually, mentally, physically, and emotionally. And so today, by popular demand, I've had a lot of feedback from our segment that we did with Jamie Devine, president of the South Carolina School Board Association. So Mr. Devine agreed to come back to continue the conversation. And so today, I hope that for as much feedback that I got, I really hope that you guys will take the time to call in and ask your questions. He's here today for that because he wants to continue this dialogue. And we want to help our school, our state school system to be better than it was on yesterday. So, you know, we have to do our part. And I'm grateful that he's, you know, back again. And I also want to thank my panel with me, my host, co-host, Minister Margot Williams, and also school psychologist Capricia White. I thank you ladies for sticking it out with me this month. And so, Mr. Devine, welcome back.
Thank you, and it's good to be here. I'm looking forward to the discussion on this evening.
Okay. Well, let's get into it. I know that one of the big topics, and you and I have discussed this, that was really where people were calling back was the whole decision where the school boards make a recommendation in order for teachers that suspending the teacher's license for a year. That was a really sore topic. You know, because you have people who are passionate about teaching, different things and events happen in their lives, and then they have to leave. And so knowing that, you know, at the point where you have to leave, now your professional license is being threatened, it leaves a really bad feeling. And so for me, and this is just coming from me and Minister Margot and Capricia, you guys can chime in as well. I feel like we want people that want to be in the classroom teaching our children. We don't want anybody to feel like they have been bullied into staying, and we don't really want a disgruntled employee staying because they don't want their license suspended. So I know that you have the law, and you'll be able to read that, but I want to kind of get Minister Margot's feedback on that because she is in the classroom.
So specifically, what is your question for me?
So specifically, it's what is your take as far as school boards recommending that a teacher's license be suspended if they have to leave, say, an event with their contract, they have to end their contract. What is your take on that?
Well, I understand the reasoning behind it. However, I don't believe that it really is a fair type of decision for them to make. And because for various reasons people leave, and just what you said, you would not want someone to be in a classroom and they really don't want to be there. But because of repercussions such as that, you know, that would cause them to stay. Because when I look at it, it's very difficult for me to say that is good and or bad, because mm-hmm. I understand we're looking at such a deficit with teachers already. And we know that when people are desperate, they do they take desperate
right.
measures.
Mm-hmm.
So I really don't know how to answer that truthfully because
okay.
I understand it from both sides of
right.
it. But
mm-hmm.
I'm very sensitive to the view of a teacher because many times people leave, they'll leave for other opportunities. They'll leave because of family situations, that all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
So I do believe that it's difficult to rationalize that it's okay, that should be the thing to happen, because who wants to turn down an opportunity for something that could be better, you know, in your personal life?
Right.
That's a hairy question for me because I can see both
mm-hmm.
sides of it.
Right. And I can understand it being a case-by-case, you know, case-by-case basis. I'm not saying that, you know, I mean, of course, if something egregious happened, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I definitely
yeah.
understand. But just to make it a normal process, because as we know, life happens to all of us. Capricia, I'd like to hear your take on that, because if I'm not mistaken, that applies this we're talking about teachers, but district-wide, I think that kind of that recommendation can be for different positions that people have in the district.
Absolutely. So I can just give you speak from personal experience. This actually happened to me this year, where I pretty much had to make a decision, a financial decision that was best for my family at the time. And I literally had to fight to get out of my contract. And I was threatened, you know, that my license would be taken up to the board, but I just kind of had to do it on a woman of prayer and just pray that, you know, they didn't send my license. But I know for many staff members, that's a scary thing to know that, you know, you have to make a financial decision for your family, but you're still, you know, taking the risk of not being able to practice at all and put yourself in more financial hardship. But it was just something I had to pray on, and just God said move, so I had to do it, and best decision I could have made.
Wow. Wow. So, Mr. Divine, I want you to
yes,
chime
ma'am.
In, and I know that you have the information that you wanted, you know, to read as well. So,
okay.
Your take after, you know, after having, you know, numerous discussions and everything with this topic.
So, a couple things. Going back to what Ms. White, correct?
Say again?
Yes.
Yeah, going back to what Ms. White said, and going back to what
okay.
you said, Tyra, too, each certificate dealing with the certificate is on a case-by-case basis. Staff does look at those carefully, and staff does ensure that we have a highly qualified teacher in each classroom. Going back to Minister Margot, I see both sides of it. From the school district's perspective, I am now losing an employee who is in the classroom. I now have to find a suitable replacement for that person, and so that may take some time. If we've been in education long enough, I can remember when teachers were plenty, and we could replace within a week or two. You know, if Ms. White left today and she said, hey, I got a better opportunity, here's my two-week notice, most likely most school boards at that point would have said, okay, no problem, we can find a suitable replacement within a week. And, you know, you go to job fairs, there's a line around the corner for people to get into education. But that's not the case now. I do remember those times. And so now that those times have changed, it is a challenge for school districts across the state, across the country, to get educators into the classroom for various reasons. And so we want to make sure that each classroom has a highly qualified teacher. And so this is a last, let me be clear, this is a last step in the process before we, you know, have to release someone. And I did want to bring back the state law and the regulation. There are two that pertain to this topic. and you can look it up. It's under the South Carolina Professional Personnel Resignation Regulation 43-206, where it says, and I'll just read maybe the first sentence or two. I won't read the entire thing, but this has been in effect since 1976. Any teacher who fails to comply with the provisions of his or her contract without the written consent of the school board shall be deemed guilty of professional conduct. A breach of conduct resulting from the execution of employment contract with another board within the state without the consent of the board first employing the teacher makes void any subsequent contract with any other school district in South Carolina for the same employment period. So that kind of sends, I guess, the calls for the resignation and why we do sometimes school boards do what they do. That's one. That's regulation 43-206. There's another regulation, 43-58.1, which talks about reporting of terminations of school district employees. And this basically says, state board policy, a district superintendent on behalf of the local board of education shall report to the chair of the state board of education and the state superintendent of education the name and certificate number of any certified educator who is dismissed, resigns, or is otherwise separated from employment with the district based on allegations of misconduct, including but not limited to involving drugs, sexual misconduct, the commission of a crime, immorality, moral turpitude, or dishonesty that is reasonably believed by the district superintendent to constitute grounds for revocation or suspension of the certificate based on the educator by the state of by the state board. So that's just a brief sentence, first two sentences of each of those regulations, and that's the law that we deal with as school board members across the state to ensure that we keep in compliance with the state board and what they require. Now, if we don't do that, the State Department could cause a deficit to our accreditation, and we definitely don't want that. We need all of our school districts accredited, and we don't want to be placed on any type of status of probation from the Department of Education. So that's really where that comes from, Regulation 43-58.1 and 43-206.
Okay. And now you said that this was a policy from, you said, 1976?
Correct. Code of Laws of South Carolina, 1976. Yes, ma'am.
So do you guys go through any type of process where you, like, relook at any of those regulations
as the years change?
As the state regulations, I mean,
You got two boards. I'm not on the state board. The state board is the board that deals with our current state superintendent of education under Ms. Spearman. I forget who the current board chair is. It used to be Mike Brennan from BB&T, a Truist. I forget who the current state chair of the state board is.
Okay. Okay.
So they would be the ones who review that. And also, I think on today, they reviewed some of these requests from school districts regarding teacher terminations today as well. They typically do it on the, I guess today's the third Tuesday. I think they do it on the third Tuesday of each month.
Okay. Okay. Mr. Devine, we have a question, so I'm going to open it up for a caller, and then I do have a question or two that has been sent to me. So I'm getting ready to open the mic for caller 5375. Give me 1 second.
Hi, everyone. Since we're talking about regulations and policies and procedures, Mr. Devine, I have a question, and it may and it pertains to basically special education right about now. We have a shortage of teachers, and where are we with, we need to evaluate a student, and the process to evaluate, initial evaluation, once we get in all the paperwork, then we take 60 days, but there's a shortage of teachers. Where we are in South Carolina for is closing that, because children in special ed are not receiving the services due to we may not have a special ed teacher. Are we ready to prepare? Are we prepared for this, for a lack of teachers? So what are we doing with the evaluation process and making sure special ed students are receiving free and appropriate education according to their IEP, the outline of their IEP?
So I'm going to, if you don't mind, give me the question again. How long? So your basic question is, can we reduce the amount of time to 60 days?
No, that's federal. We really can't reduce that. No, my basic question is, what are we doing, or how are we going to service kids with special needs, special ed? We have teachers leaving left and right, but kids with special needs are still entitled to their services, outlined according to their IEP, individual educational plan. But since so many teachers are exiting the field of teaching, how are we servicing our special ed students?
Let me be clear. That's a great question. I don't have any specific answers on tonight. If you don't mind, let me go back to a couple of our superintendents, ask them that specific question, and let me get a response back to you, if that's okay.
Oh, and I really appreciate that. It is a broad question, and it would have to come from our area superintendents. What are they facing with this problem of educating? You know, is anybody looking out or thinking about the kids and the services? Because right now that's a federal mandate.
Yes, exactly. I can share with you just from a 30,000-foot view, as we were told specifically in our district last year and in 2020 when the pandemic first happened, as everybody had to pivot to do virtual learning, I know that some of our staff went to, with permission, of course, of the parent, did go to some of the students' houses to give them the services that was needed. I do know that some of the parents did the telelearning. Or did Zoom with the teacher, kind of one on one. I do know that happened. But I understand your question. What are we going to do for the future? Because many folks are leaving, and again, I will get you a response to that. But those are just some of the things that I know. Again, 30,000 feet that we dealt with, and some of the ways that we dealt with those students during that time.
Okay,
and that's fair enough.
Carla, what I would like for you to do also, I don't know if you have another question, but what I would like for you to do also, so that Mr. Devine would be able to respond back to you, if you could inbox me on Facebook or on Instagram, and I'll make sure that once he responds, I'll get that directly to you, and then I can put a post or something on the social media with him with the response to what your answer to what your question is. Now, did you have question before I go to anything else?
No, for right now.
Okay.
Because I was working on some consulting work with that, so I just wanted to know where we are with that, but I'm good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate you calling in. Okay. Mr. Devine, I got a question that was emailed to me. So here's a scenario. It says, the person says, I know of two teachers who were retaliated against by their principal because of their criticism of the school to the district officials. There is no way for me to report that information without myself getting in trouble. What would you tell teachers and other staff to do in those situations?
Another great question. What I would do is, and we've not had any retaliation that we know of, let me say that, or that I know of, and just across the state as I talk to different staff about different things within a school, you can always send a note to the board. A lot of times we get either anonymous notes or we get a note with the person's name on it who is willing to state what the problem is and then possibly what the solution should be. So I would suggest that if they don't feel comfortable talking with the principal, the mm-hmm. in Richmond 1, I don't know how it is in other school districts, you may have an area supervisor or area superintendent or deputy superintendent that you could go to that's above the principal. I would write him or her a note, and then I will go to the superintendent. And then after the superintendent, then come to the board. But some people go directly to the board. We are obligated, once we receive notice of something, we're obligated to have it investigated, and then we will report the findings as appropriate to that person or to appropriate authorities if needed.
Okay. Great. Thank you so much for responding to that. Okay, I have another question here. This one says, the legislature is considering allowing schools to hire up to 25% uncertified teachers per school next year. What is your position on that bill?
So that bill will actually come up, I believe it's tomorrow or Thursday. Right now, we require all of in public education, we require everyone to be, you know, certified. I would suggest mm-hmm. that we keep that. I know this is really leaning towards private schools and charter schools, which have some more leeway than public schools. And I'm not a proponent of private dollars going to public schools. So absolutely. My position, you know, at this point would be that we keep the same requirements that we have with our public schools at this point. Now, if I get some additional information, that may change, but as of right now, that's where I'm at on that question.
Okay. Okay. Capricia, do you have a question?
I do, and this question is coming from a fellow school psychologist, and she wanted to know, do you feel like if the decisions you make are of benefit for all students within the district? If yes, how so?
So when we make decisions, and it's based off the information that is received typically from the from senior staff, pretty much the superintendent, deputy superintendent, the cabinet members. So when we make those decisions, we have to use what I call value judgment. And value judgment is that we value the judgment of our staff. You know, some things are routine, which you know, really doesn't come to the board. Some things are, you know, staff made a decision, and then they inform the board afterwards, and that's okay. Some things is that the administration would like to hear from us before they make a decision, particularly as it pertains to COVID. They want to hear from the board because the board represents their community. And so the board and the administration made some decisions together. Then some things required by law to take final action on. In that case, again, the board respects the judgment of the administration, and we hold them accountable for that decision. And so, yes, the answer to the basic question, yes, all decisions should be to affect all children in whatever circumstance that is applied to.
Okay. And I have another question for you.
Yes.
If you look at the demographics of this district, how would you go about effectively distributing equity in education, not equality?
Great question. We have looked at all of our policies first. We took a year, last year, 2021, to look at all of our policies from Section A to Section, I think, L or K, throughout the district to ensure that all of our students get what they need, not just students, but also personnel, and then also with the community. We have some policies that deals with equity with our community as well. Again, we look at all of the aspects of policymaking throughout the entire throughout the entire district. And so going forward, we've agreed that every 2 to 3 years or so, we should look at all of our policies, particularly those that pertain to equity. We want to ensure that all of our students and teachers get what they need going forward. And let me give you, for example, we have choice now in public education, a more choice. We've always had choice. We have even more choice in public education. Those students that want to go to a particular area, let's just say health science, we have that particular program at C.A. Johnson High School. They have an opportunity to go into health science. And we have a student that want to go into a national baccalaureate. They have that actually at two schools, Laura Richland High School as well as AC Flora. We have our finance academy, our cyber security academy also at Columbia High. So, again, you have choices within schools, so that's the equity that you see there. We have students that will travel across the district that may go to Hayward Career Center, which we have the first diesel technology mechanic program east of the Mississippi that we started several years ago. So those are some of the equity things I see as it pertains to students going forward. Because we and also we have dual enrollment for our students. We have students now that graduate not only with a high school diploma but also with an associate's degree. And really that's economic development. In other words, it now gives our students a competitive advantage to ensure that they graduate with 2 years of college. Now instead of going to school as a freshman, now they may enter as a sophomore. They may only now pay for 2 years of school versus 4 years of school, which is a great economic advantage for our students so that they can now have less student loans going into life as they start off. So those are some of the equity things that I see going forward.
Okay. Someone has some background noise going on. So if you could mute your phone, I don't know who it is, but someone's phone is making a lot of noise in the background. I don't know if there's someone else in the room with you. Jamie, I have a quick question for you. And I don't know, first, let's back up for a second. Ms. White, do you have another question or was your question answered?
That was all of the questions that I had. I'm probably going to circle back around to something, but go ahead and ask your question.
Okay. Jamie, there was something that you said. You talked about the programs that was at two of the high schools?
Yes, ma'am.
What's the name of that program again?
So each of our high schools have what we call school choice, choices within the school. So mm-hmm. at C.A. Johnson High School, we call it our health magnet program, where students will learn about sports medicine, the field of medicine, the field of health in general. We did a survey several years ago, and we know, and according to all the recent surveys, that health, the healthcare field is going to be a good field to go into in the near future. So we planned some years ago to have a health magnet program at C.A. Johnson High School. It's one of several throughout the district. Throughout the state. I know Irmo has one, Lex 5. I know Richland 2 has one, I think, at Ridgeview as well. And so it's a program, you know, that students can go into the health magnet program.
Right. So that wasn't it, Jamie. It was gosh, I think it's the program.
The National Baccalaureate program?
Right. Because there's two schools for that, correct, that has that utilizes
correct.
That program.
It's
and so
Laura
what are
Richland,
the –
Laura Richland High School.
Uh-huh.
And AC Flora High School.
Okay. So out of with those two schools, and I don't know if you have these numbers in front of you, how many kids are actually participating in that program? And then how many students have actually successfully completed that program?
I have that information. I just can't put my hands on it right this minute. But I can get it for you. I don't know off the top of my head. I will say that Laura Richland has the newer IB program. AC Flora has been in effect for several years now. So I would imagine off the top of my head that AC Flora would probably have more students. However, we're building the program at Laura Richland High School. We even have a middle school component that goes along with that because we felt that was important to ensure that students, when they get to middle school, that they continue on that track to the high school level as well.
Okay. So now, is this a program that is actually, like, advertised to where, because I know, like, when you have the school of choice and everything, that parents that are outside, children that are outside of the district, are they able to participate in that or in that particular program?
You know, that's another great question. I am not sure of that specific program.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
I do know that from time to time students do transfer in from other schools to access some of our programs. I just don't have a specific, you know, answer for that
okay.
one.
Okay, that's fair. Okay, Minister Margot, I think you have some questions as well.
I do have a question concerning substitute teachers. I'd like to know who determines the qualification for substitute teachers, and is there some type of evaluation process for them? Because we have so many substitutes now, and my concern is that many of them are there for extended periods of time, and how can we ensure that there's actually teaching going on in the classroom and not just someone to monitor? So who determines?
Okay. Pretty much that is an administrative and or district decision when it comes to substitutes. We do have a policy that pertains to that. I don't know. I know it's in the G policy, which deals with personnel. I don't recall the substitute policy, but there is a policy that pertains to that. And then pretty much the administration deals with that as well as the evaluation of said staff as well.
So are you saying that that's something that's determined district by district or school by school?
District by district.
Okay.
Because, you know, for example, once, and I'm just throwing this out, I'm not saying this is totally fact, but one district may pay, you know, may have a difference in pay. You know, you have short-term subs, you have long-term subs who may be qualified. You may have a teacher who retired last year, who the district said, hey, can you come back and teach this class again for us? The person who took your spot is going to be out on medical leave for an extended period of time.
Mm-hmm.
We know that classroom was covered by a qualified, licensed, certified teacher who can continue teaching in that particular classroom as though nothing happened. We may have in the classroom those persons with college degrees. Some may not have college degrees. It's not always, you know, sometimes we see on TV or out on social media, oh, it's just a warm body in the class and the teacher leaves, you know, notes for the substitute. A lot of times we have retirees or former educators who do come back and who do sub for our schools, and not just the Richland one, but across the state, who come back and help our schools because they feel led or they feel it's a calling, and I'm putting calling in quotations, to ensure that students have a qualified educator in front of them to teach them each and every day.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I agree with you. I mean, at my school, we have a teacher who is 72 years old who retired from a school district, and she relocated and began subbing for, it was a long-term sub because the teacher passed away. And she was offered to stay and apply for full-time if she wanted to. And she's been teaching for the past 3 years, and she's now 72 years old and
wow.
can keep up and is healthy and everything. And, you know, that's a great situation. But my concern has been those who are not qualified in terms of having an understanding of much of the protocol in a classroom and truly being able to help the students with whatever the, you know, whatever the content is. So that's why I was asking that question, because although my children are grown, I still have this focus on the families who have their children in our district in particular, that perhaps their children are not receiving all that they need to because of our circumstances and the way things are being done, you know, today.
Right. So real quick, I did find the policy. In our manual, it is policy GCG, which talks about substitutes. Original
mm-hmm.
one substitute must be 21 years of age, have at least 60 semester hours of college credit.
Mm-hmm.
Those
mm-hmm.
who meet this standard may be approved as a substitute upon review and approval by the chief human resources officer. And this is, again, as you know, this is the importance of having educators still at the table. And because of COVID, you know, that's been exacerbated. So we want to make sure that we get those persons who are definitely qualified to be in the classroom and not just a warm body in the classroom. But again, we want to. That's the basic requirement, and then there's some other training that comes along with that, particularly with our long-term subs. And according to our rule, the administration require long-term subs to be certified whenever possible. If we can't get a certified person in the classroom, we most definitely will bring someone in who is highly qualified to be there. But we do our best to continue to train those persons, provide some type of continuing education or just some type of onboarding, if you will, when it comes to letting them know our stance as a district and where we are and where we would like for them to be and to participate.
Okay.
Great. So, Jamie, when I was asking you the question in reference to how is the program being put out to where other people are aware of the program and then asking about students that are not in the district, I got a response to that. And the response that came in, it stated students within the district probably can go, but students outside of the district have to pay.
I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
However, there are opportunities where, you know, for the most part, that's an accurate statement. I'm going to leave that there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So
on
our website, and I'm sorry I don't have it up in front of me,
okay.
each year around this time, December, January, we start planning for the new year. We have, of course, the teacher recruitment fairs. We have where we talk about choice, the magnet programs. As a matter of fact, the magnet application is now open. Richland 1, December 13th to January 31st, 2022. So those who need to apply, we ask that they start applying there now. We have various programs from Career Awareness Magnet, Montessori Elementary Magnet, Language Immersion Magnet. We have pre-kindergarten classes and our virtual school program as well. And then that travels up to the high schools where we have, again, those same classes that we talked about earlier, as well as we have two charter schools in Richland 1 as well, the Richland 1 Middle College and Center for Learning also in Richland School District 1. So there are, again, a lot of options and opportunities for our students. That's why it is so important, in my opinion, to keep public dollars in public schools. I think you're seeing a little more equity and diversity in offerings in school districts, and not just in Richland 1, but across the state of South Carolina, because I believe we realize now that we can't do schooling the way we used to do it. We need to reimagine education. And when I say that, we need to just look at education a little differently. You know, we use what we call the old Carnegie units. And Carnegie units is based off a number of hours that a person sits and gets information. The old sit and get information isn't the way of the future. I believe that students should have project-based and career-based opportunities to learn about what it is that they want to learn. And in addition to that, they need to master the content and not put everything on a test score. You know, it's almost like riding a bike. You learn to master riding the bike once you learn how to hold the bike up. Then you learn to balance. Then you learn how to turn left, how to turn right. Then you pedal slowly. You know, it's that mastery of learning how to ride a bike. So that's the way that I see education going in the future. We've changed furniture now. You know, you go to some schools look like a Starbucks cafe, the way they have it set up. They have the tall bar stools and tall chairs. So schooling is going to look different in the future. So, again, we got to reimagine education and what that looks like. So I'll stop there. I'm sorry. I get a little passionate.
Well, I have another question that came in.
Yes.
And it says, choice is a good option, but it's still based on acceptance. So not everyone gets in. So to the equity question, do they expand the number of acceptance?
So students are eligible based on attendance zones, based on it's kind of almost first come, first serve. Some are a lottery process, which is a random computerized selection process. Again, everybody can't get in because we don't have the X amount of slots. For example, I remember when we started with Montessori several years ago, Montessori Middle School, we had probably 15 students in middle school Montessori because some of the students did not want to leave our elementary Montessori and go to the middle school Montessori, and we spent well over $1 million for 14 kids at the time. But now that program has grown tremendously in our middle school Montessori. I'd love for us to build our first Montessori high school. Transportation is provided. That is one equity piece that we have, unlike some other districts across the state, where you have to provide your own transportation to get to a particular program. And then we also look at where the program goes, so it is equitable across across the district. And again, you are right. Everybody can't go in because you only have X amount of slots because you get X amount of dollars. And then once the program is up, you have to maintain that program based off the number of personnel, based off of the number of students who want to participate, kind of going forward.
Okay. So then I guess as far as the person's actual question of, let's see, do they expand the number of acceptance? So I guess it's kind of more... Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
So if we get additional requests, the administration has to go back and look at that, and then they'll come to the board and say, you know, board, we've seen, you know, for example, language immersion. Language immersion was a small program that started about 5-6 years ago because these students are now fifth graders going into middle school, because we would like to add a language immersion middle school piece. Staff is looking at that now, as well as, you know, dealing with some COVID dollars and protocol, so that, you know, going forward we can see how how the two can work together. So if those students who are graduating now would like a middle school program, and the parents and the students, you know, ask us to help, we definitely will try to provide it. However, as you know, funding is going to be something that we need to take a look at. Again, this is why we got to keep public dollars in public schools. Our language immersion program has grown tremendously. I don't know the number of students, but we are building on to Carver Lyon Elementary because we've had such an explosion of students who want to be in a language immersion program. And particularly students from that particular area has embraced it, and they are participants in the program. And so we've had to add on, we had, I think, a number of those portable trailers out in the back of the school for several years, and we voted some time ago to expand the school, and now we're building an additional building on the grounds to house the language immersion program. But again, funding is going to be so vital to keep not just language immersion, but our career preparation, our health magnet program, and even going forward, the virtual school program and these other programs that we have across the district.
Great, great, great. So, Jamie, I guess at this point what I want to ask you, you know, I thank you for coming back on, but as a community, what can we do, one, to help teachers get more money, and two, I want you to let us know how the community can become more involved in the school board meetings. What can we do to help you all to make sure that our children across the state of South Carolina get the education that they need? Tell us what you guys need from us.
So I'll start with teachers. We're all elected. You all elect us as school board members. You all elect your county council members. You all elect your state house of representative members, and you all elect your state senators as well. I would encourage you to write, email, or call all of these other persons who are responsible from a state level. We're a political subdivision of the state. School boards are across the state. We're a political subdivision of the state, which in turn means that the state funds us. We typically get about 24 to 26% of the state's revenue should go to public education. I do have in front of me our 2022 legislative platform, which we presented to our state legislators. We had a Richland County delegation meeting scheduled, but the House met back in December to talk about COVID mandates, and so we did not have that meeting. Getting with Representative Howard to have that meeting hopefully here soon. But one of the things that we talk about, again, is funding. Let me just give you a live number. For the current fiscal year 2022, the base student cost is $2,516, which is the fiscal year 2008 level, when it should be about $3,140 for fiscal year 2022. So right now we're being underfunded about $600 to $700 from our state, just from our state. And there's some additional formulas and also lottery money that we are not receiving fully at this time because some funds are being diverted for vouchers and for charter schools. So I would definitely say let's advocate on the state level. Then secondly, county council members, because a portion of their budget goes to the school district as well. Then thirdly, I would say that parents are always involved through PTO and SIC. They can always be involved from that level, and we, of course, invite them to participate. I believe PTO came about in the Children's Education Act of 2000, and so we highly encourage parents to do that. Now, those of us that may not have children in school, may have graduated, or may not have children yet to go to school, you can always come. I can speak for Richland 1 and Richland 2. We meet every second and fourth Tuesdays of the month. You can always express how you feel about public education and how you think education should be. And so those are just a few ways for the community to be involved to help us increase awareness as to what is going on as well. Also, okay. Let me add this. We talked about this last week at our school board meeting. We have increased our visibility because we had a strategic plan several years ago that said we needed more visibility as a district, and so we now have billboards. We now send 3 mailings home or to our households in Richland School District 1 footprint, where we have, I think it's a spring newsletter. I think there's a summer and maybe a fall newsletter. Again, all the social media accounts, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram is where we are. But for those who may not be on social media, you should at least 3 times a year get something from the district telling what we're doing, how we're spending money, and kind of the happenings and what's going on in the local school district as well.
Now, is that something that's sent with the kids, or does it go out to all of the residents?
All of the residents, those who may not, you know, have children in school, mm-hmm. you should be receiving that for the winter. That should be coming out soon, probably end of the month, going into February. Typically is when it come out. We also have State of the District, which is also where the superintendent talks about the state of the school district and where we are as a district, things that we've accomplished over the past year, then what we're looking forward to in the upcoming year. We do have 3 public sessions when it comes to the budget. If you follow me on Facebook, go to our website, you can access those meetings or at least know when the dates are. Typically, February, March is when we start on our budget for the upcoming year, so 22-23 budget is probably being disseminated now within the staff, and then it'll come to the board sometime in March, April, and hopefully pass it. If the General Assembly passed their budget by June, we hope to have our budget passed by June so we can start on July 1 of 2022.
Okay. Jamie, I definitely thank you. I want to go around and see Minister Margot. Do you have anything else that you would like to add or anything that you would like to leave the listeners with?
No, I just want to say thank you, Mr. Devine, because you are very thorough, and I believe that you're excellent at what you're doing. And so the people of Richland 1 are very, I think they're sitting in a good position to have you in the position that you're in, even with the state. So it's been a pleasure to listen to you and join in conversation.
Thank you.
Definitely. Ms. White?
Yes, so I just wanted to circle back to the question about equity. And I know that you spoke on the whole idea of choice and it being like a lottery system for students to go. My thing, I would just say let's always consider with the whole choice program, all of our students won't be able to go for whatever reason. They might not be chosen, but we just have to think about what programs can we put in place where the students are to meet their needs to ensure equity. Mr. Devine, I just wanted to say thank you for your transparency. When you did not know an answer to a question, you simply were honest and said that you didn't know. And I truly, truly appreciate that because sometimes I feel like district members or school board members, they can, when they don't know the answer, they can come off as a politician. And I just appreciate your honesty. Thank you.
Yes.
Absolutely. Jamie, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your busy day to come back on a second time. I mean, to me, that says a lot. And it says that you're willing to hear what people have to say. And even though we didn't get a lot of callers, but we got different questions that had been, you know, sent to ask you. So, you know, it lets us know. And from looking, you know, and just from the different feedback that I got from the first conversation, you know, people are listening. And so I thank you for taking the time listening to the questions, answering them. And just like Mrs. White said, you know, when you didn't know, you were able to say, hey, you don't know. And so that means a lot. I know that, as you said, mm-hmm. in the first conversation, that you'll be taking, you know, these questions back and addressing mm-hmm. your colleagues, because conversations like this is needed so that we can help our children, so we can help our teachers. And in order to be a great statement, these are the conversations that's needed, and we have to do it so that we can help. You know, it's just again, I can't say thank you enough. I mean, because again, you took time to come back a second time, and so to me that means a lot, and I thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you all again for inviting me. You know, I'm open and honest, just a country boy from Aiken County, born and raised, and came here to the big city of Columbia. And I just believe that if you do right, you sleep tight, and that, you know, mm-hmm. and treat everybody right, you know, whether we disagree or whether we don't agree on something, we need to make sure that we sit down and just listen to each other. I may not, quote, unquote, like somebody or like something, but you know what? Now we need to just sit down and listen, because diversity of voices make a difference, because someone may say something to me that I had no idea of, but you know what? That may change my mind to now say, you know what? Now I understand that. Let's continue to move forward. And one other thing that I want to add, too, is that we got to have action, and action means that, in my opinion, we need to be at the State House. So for example, I cannot find the agenda for tomorrow. At 11 o'clock, the Senate's going to be talking again about this education voucher savings account, where, again, they're taking public dollars, a little over $3 billion, and giving it to the voucher program. We need this house so they understand. I testified last week about it, so they understand that we need our own money, public dollars, and to go to public schools. Now, I believe it is unconstitutional and has been proven unconstitutional when the governor tried, said back in October, the Supreme Court said it was unconstitutional to use that $38 or $42 million that was directed to, that he wanted to direct towards public, private schools, and it was unconstitutional. So I believe this is the same type of thing that we have. I think it's in Article 6, Section 3, the U.S. of the state constitution that talks about that, that talks about we should not be spending public dollars in public, I mean, sending public dollars to private schools. And so, again, I know it was Article 6, Section 3 of the state constitution directs the provision for the maintenance and support of a system of free public schools open to all children in the state of South Carolina. And, again, no money shall be paid from public funds, nor shall the credit of the state or the public subdivision for the direct benefit of any religious or other private educational institution. And, again, I think this is unconstitutional, but we have some folks who just don't care. They're going to push it. And I think we need people like us to come up, call your representative, email, just make it known. I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, I mean, and you're right, and rightfully so. So, I mean, listeners, we need to get on the horn. I mean, tonight, some fingers need to be moving. We need to be emailing. And if you're able to be...
Senate Bill 935, Educational Scholarship Account. Senate Bill 935, Educational Scholarship Account. Senator Darrell Jackson, who represents Richland County, he's not my representative, but I did call him and express my concern to him that he should be a no vote. And Senator Hutto from Orangeburg, I expressed to him he should be a no vote as well. It's in subcommittee. I think tomorrow's the last day it'll be in subcommittee. I think it's going to move forward on a 3-2 vote for it to pass. Senator Tallis and Senator Shane Massey out of Edgeville, and there's another senator that will probably push it forward to go to the full committee. To the full committee, then it goes to the Senate for a final vote. So I would encourage us to, again, at least get with Senator Jackson and just express our concerns to him. And maybe I can email you offline.
Okay.
Tyra, just send that to you. We can put it out on Facebook and talk a little bit about the and then say vote no for Senate Bill 935.
Right.
Yes.
Well, we really need to push and make that happen, you guys, because we can't allow that to happen. I mean, it's already been deemed unconstitutional, and so it shouldn't come back up. But as we know, sometimes people will repackage things and send it a different way.
Right. Mm-hmm.
This has been great. I'm really glad that, you know, we're having these conversations. So, next week, you guys, we will have Nicholas Pearson. He's the principal of Sumter High School. He will be on with us again discussing the state of education in South Carolina. So thank you all. See you next week. Thank you again to my co-host, and thank you once again, Mr. Divine. I definitely appreciate you.
All right. Thank you all. Have a great
This is already done.